All right, welcome back to KMBR tonight. Carrie Crowley hanging with you until 10 p.m. I want to remind you, you're listening to KMBR and KMBR FM San Francisco, a Cumulus Media station. And it is that time of the evening. We promised you we would talk Hall of Fame. We promised you we would talk MLB lockout. We promised you we would talk Giants baseball. And we promised you we would do it with the greatest, Marty Lurie. Marty, how are you tonight?
Oh, doing terrific, Carrie. As I say in Arizona, if you listen carefully, you could almost hear the bat hit the ball. Not exactly this year, but this is about the time of year where you like to hear it.
It is. And I'm so looking forward to spring training. I hope that it happens. One of the topics we will touch on, of course, Major League Baseball lockout. But one thing that I wanted to do to just kick us off, Marty, the Giants announcing on Wednesday that Ron Wotus will be returning to the organization, 35th overall season as a special assistant to baseball operations. I know you're tight with Woe. He's a guest every weekend on Talkin' Baseball, pitching River Islands with you. This news had to be good.
Well, it's terrific. It really is. And then for the Giants, they've got a great resource here. And look, Woe knows the game cold, and no one breaks it down like he does. But he's going to be available before the game in uniform to work with the players. He's going to watch the game, and then, you know, afterwards he's still around. He could go to Sacramento. He can go to San Jose. And he's still very, very much a part of the organization, and he is the link to what baseball used to be. And he's a link to what baseball is today with the analytics. So he's a rare breed, and they're very, very lucky to have him. And I know he's thrilled to put the uniform on and be out there before the game and work with the players, and especially the young players in the minor leagues. So I said, hey, you did retire, you know. Well, not exactly. He's still got a lot to do. And then, of course, every Sunday morning, you know, Woe is on with me, and we break down the week of baseball in a humorous way, in a serious way, in an intricate way. And I've told him a million times, I don't think there's a show in the country that has an active coach, someone that close to the game, who can break the game down for the fans every weekend. So we've had fun. This is about our 12th year of doing it. And I'm thrilled that he'll be with me every Sunday morning.
Yeah, really, really good news that Ron Wotus will be back with the Giants organization. I think that everyone in San Francisco thrilled about that, particularly with what he has meant to the Giants. And just an outstanding conduit from the organization to the fans through your show, Talking Baseball, every Sunday morning. I know when I drive into the stadium as a beat writer, it's what I listen to. And so just a thrill to be a part of that. And Marty, Ron was on Twitter earlier today. Some other news. This news, sad. Gene Kline's passed away earlier today. Ron was thanking him for helping Ron break into the big leagues in 1998 with the Giants organization. Gene, of course, had a very significant impact, a Bay Area native and someone from the area, represented the area so well. And so a sad day for baseball.
Yeah, for Gene Kline's from Harry Ells High School over in Richmond in those days. And no one ever said a bad word about him. And he was an outfielder with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And once in 71 or so, the Pirates put an all-African-American lineup out there. And Gene Kline was one of the outfielders in that lineup. But he could hit. Take a drink, everybody. He could hit. He was a good hitter. He knew the game cold, but he's a nice man. And he got along with everyone. And for Woe, when he got involved with the Giants that first year in the mid-90s, it was Ron Perinosky and Gene Kline's. It really taught Woe quite a bit about what it would be like to be in the major league. So I had him on the show. I'm sure Raf has an interview somewhere in our archives, which we'll bring out this year, about Gene Kline's. And just a solid, solid person, and a real loss to the organization. A young man, really. And it's unfortunate. But, boy, that is certainly what this year has been all about. Every day you turn around, it's someone else.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And Brian Sabian, who was quoted in the Giants statement earlier today, called Gene a beautiful man on and off the field. He was such a kind and humble soul. And, you know, when those are the characteristics and traits that are mentioned before your baseball career, you can really tell that it was someone who had a profound impact, not just on the sport, but on the lives that he touched in the sport.
Well, as I say in all these unfortunate obituaries and eulogies that we have to talk about, I always end that he was a good man. Mm-hmm. He was a good man, and that's where it counts. And he was an outstanding baseball player, but as Brian Sabian said it, as only Brian can, You know, he meant a lot to everyone just as a person. And that's what Gene Kleins was. And, you know, it's been a number of years since obviously he's been with the Giants. But in those years of the 90s, the excitement of the 90s, Gene was a big part of it.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show tonight, Marty, is so that we could talk about the Hall of Fame and so that we could talk about the lockout as well. And I think that let's start with the Hall of Fame and the results that come out Tuesday. I know you weren't surprised that Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame and wasn't elected on the writer's ballot, but any surprise that David Ortiz was?
Not really. David Ortiz, of course, was involved with the Mitchell Report and that anonymous leak that said that he had failed the test. It was supposed to be just to gauge, you know, what the PED usage might be. There was no backup on it. And, you know, it came out in sort of a funny way. So he always sort of got a pass on that, that no one took the Mitchell Report very seriously. It was kind of a whitewash of things that were going on in those days. So Ortiz kind of sort of sidestepped that issue of PEDs. But, you know, it didn't surprise me at all. His community work in Boston. He's one of the most outstanding, one of the most outstanding postseason hitters with dramatic, dramatic hits. He meant so much to the community in Boston and just a tremendous ball player. I mean, to me, he's a Hall of Famer. The only issue is, would he get caught up in the paranoia around the steroid use? And I think he really sidestepped it, because he was involved in the Mitchell Report, which was not given much credibility. So it didn't shock me that he got in. What he did in the community and just being Big Poppy and all that kind of stuff, it would be tough to overlook him. He had a Hall of Fame career. Mm-hmm. Didn't have much until he went to the Red Sox, which is always one of those red flags.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, with Seattle and Minnesota, he was just another ball player. He came to Boston around 2004, Pedro brought him over there. And then the next thing, he turned into this tremendous hitter, but hit over 50 home runs, but still was one of those clutch performers in a sort of a nice way. No one ever thought he was lying, Let's put it that way. And that's one of the issues that Clemens and Bonds ran into. And Ortiz really didn't have that.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Baggage.
But it does create a juxtaposition of someone who has a tie to performance-enhancing drugs. Mm-hmm. He's now in the Hall of Fame. And as we know, Bud Selig, the commissioner who presided over the steroid era, who essentially turned a blind eye and encouraged others to turn a blind eye, he is in Cooperstown, enshrined in Cooperstown. What kind of a moral conundrum do you think that creates here? And should it create a path for Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and others who were passed over on the writer's ballot 10 times to be included in Cooperstown? Do you think that's now a necessity to tell a complete story?
Well, it depends. Again, remember the movie Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield, where the math teacher asks him a question in the oral exam, and it's got 72 parts to it. And that's what the Hall of Fame question is all about. You have to define what is the Hall of Fame. And you have to define where we are today as a society. We have an imperfect society. We have many icons that are being torn down every single day. We don't know who to believe. We don't know what's what. We're polarized, whether it's January 6th, whether it's the president, the former president, whatever it is. It's the world we live in. And the Hall of Fame, for most of us in baseball, has always been that perfection. As the world sort of crumbled around us, we always look to the Hall of Fame as the heavenly, godly Hall of Fame, where only the most honest and the most respected players could get in. And that's one of the conundrums that you talk about. What is the Hall of Fame, and how does it fit into today's world as we look for perfection? And that's the big issue. So Many people, you know, guard the Valhalla, the ethical, wonderful myth of the Hall of Fame. And it is a myth because you've got racists in there. You've got, you know, alcoholics. You've got players who used illegal substances on the baseball. You've got amphetamines. You've got a million things in there. But for some reason, we love the perfection of the records. And for Clemens and Bonds, they toyed with the immortal records. It's like all of a sudden they were allowed in, and they altered the records of all time. And to many baseball writers and people who support the Hall of Fame, that was their undoing at that time. But as you bring up, and this is the issue for me, Bud Selig looked the other way. The ballpark was built by Barry Bonds. Teams made millions and millions of dollars off these players, the home run races. These players were voted MVPs. They were comeback players of the year, all-stars by the writers. And then all of a sudden, when it comes time to say, well, did you play the game properly? Someone says, no, you didn't, because you used a performance-enhancing drug and it extended your career, so we are not going to let you in. But while you played, we loved you, and we did everything we could to promote you and Tony La Russa, the managers, no matter what it was. Nobody cared. This was what made baseball in that early part of the 2000s. So it really is a dilemma of where you fall on this thing. It's not right that baseball made all this money and the players were, you know, extolled as the greatest of all time and all-time records. And then all of a sudden, 10 years later, said, you know, you didn't play the game that well. And you did things that, you know, allowed you to scratch the immortals off the record books, so we're not going to let you in. And that's going to change. I think that's ultimately going to change. Now, the problem is it's got to change with the Today Committee. And, you know, it's made up of 16 people. They're going to meet in December. They get a list that's pared down to 10, and you got to get 12 of the 16 votes, and it'll be former players and sports writers and broadcasters, and not you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's not your generation. Now, I saw a number that 86% of the new writers were in favor of Bonds and Clemens, and it was the older writers that kept them out. I think the problem with this other committee is that for a period of time in the near future, I think you're going to run into the same thing. So it's unfortunate. And again, I ask you, what is the Hall of Fame to you? Is it this mythical place where we set up the gods of baseball? And if we think you're dishonest or you lied, you can't get in? Or is it really a museum that tells a story of baseball? And an era of baseball is being overlooked because we're not going to recognize those players. So how do you answer?
Well, for me, it's the latter. It's a museum of baseball, and you can't tell the story of the generation of players that I grew up watching, Marty, was Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
Right.
I mean, you know, people around my age, our first memories of the sport are the Maguire-Sosa home run chase, the great summer home run chases. And so it's essentially telling people like me that what we saw with our own eyes, we can't acknowledge today because it wasn't real, even though at the time, by people like Bud Selig, it was very much encouraged. And it was a part of growing the sport post-lockout in 1994, 1995. You know, Major League Baseball was at a point where it really needed to generate interest, generate energy in the sport, and this was a part of it. This was a part of building back the sport, was turning that blind eye and ensuring that millions could be made again, right?
Yeah, yeah. And by not acknowledging them now and seeing them play the way you just described, which was exactly the way life was, you are revising history. And saying, no, Kerry, that didn't happen. When he hit the home run on the only pitch he saw, that didn't happen, and he hit it 500 feet. You didn't see that. And we reported it. It was in all the newspapers, on all the TV stations, the radio, and everything else. But no, it didn't happen. We're gonna wipe that off the record book. So that's the issue. And I think it is going to change. And I just think there's a basic honesty of the game that's being challenged. And that's why Pete Rose can't get in, because, you know, the one thing you always want in baseball, it's on the level. And Rose compromised that. Maybe it wasn't on the level in games that he managed. So he's in a different position. But for the steroid guys, we all watched him. We watched the postseason. We watched every. We loved it. The ratings were great. And now to say, sorry, none of that happened, and if it did happen, it was unfair, so you can't get in. It doesn't follow for me.
Mm-hmm. Talking baseball with Marty Lurie here on KMBR tonight. Carey Crowley hanging with you until 10 p.m. Marty, something else that I wanted to address with regard to the Hall of Fame. I don't think it shocked anyone that Tim Lincecum only received 9 votes and falls off the ballot. But do you think that pitchers like Lincecum will be talked about differently in terms of the Hall of Fame context 20 to 30 years from now because of the way that the game is trending? And could you ever foresee a scenario where a Lincecum or a Johan Santana are reconsidered by these committees because of these vast shifts that are changing that we're not yet ready to account for in the sport?
Well, I think it's longevity of the career, and that's the problem for Lincecum. You know, for 4 or 5 years, Lincecum was fabulous. It was Ron Guidry of 1978. It was, you know, he was it. You couldn't hit him. And when it comes to the immortals of the game, you need sort of a track record. So it has been changed. You know, the 300 wins, 3,000 hits, that's not where it is anymore. But I don't think it could be 89 wins or 90 wins or, you know, 1,200 hits. I think that's the problem, is the longevity of the Hall of Fame-type career. Mm-hmm. Now look at Tim Hudson.
Tim 200-plus wins.
223.
Yeah.
And Tim Hudson, you know, pitched some of the big games, you know, for the Braves, for the A's, for the Giants, and the 223 wins. And he's going to get knocked off the ballot. So here the question is, maybe that's one of the problems, that they should stay on the ballot. And it shouldn't be 5%. Maybe it should be if you get 5 votes or 3 votes, that you stay on the ballot at least for another 2 or 3 years so people can consider you. I think that may be something that can change. I'll tell you another thing that bugs me about it, and that is peer pressure for the electors. Mm-hmm. I think it should be a secret ballot.
Interesting. Interesting. I come from a completely different perspective.
Yeah, I don't think that the writers should flaunt who they're voting for and why. And succumb to public pressure, which I'm sure some do, but really vote what they like in America. You know, we vote and it's a secret ballot, and that's what it should be. And I'd like to see how the votes would turn out in a ballot that was not made public.
Do you like the concept of only the BBWAA considering players for the first 10 years? Would you open it up to former players, former managers, former scouts, a broader, a more diverse group of people who held jobs in baseball? Or are you okay with just the writers holding this power for the first 10 years of a player's ballot eligibility?
No, it should be broadened.
Okay.
Now, this contract with the BBWAA and the Hall of Fame goes back to the 30s. And the 40s. Well, life has changed. We didn't have the internet then. You know, we were
50 years away from the internet then.
Yeah, we had writers and older writers who traveled with the team and saw all the games. And there was no internet. You couldn't see the games on TV. And so these were the people who would be the most learned in judging whether someone had a Hall of Fame career. Well, that's all changed. That's all changed. And I think that has to change. It shouldn't be left to the writers, and it should be a broad cross-section of people in baseball. You can't mean to tell me Dwayne Kuiper shouldn't have a vote, or John Miller. Vin Scully.
Sunday Night Baseball for years. You know, he's seen the entire league. He knows every single player right and left. To me, John Miller should be, like, absolutely part of this process, right?
Yeah, so we can, you know, look at, you know, that part of baseball, and then certainly, you know, former managers, you know, people connected to the game. I think it's a great point, and I think it should be taken up, and I think it will be.
Well, that's our Hall of Fame discussion. One more topic to touch on tonight, and that is Major League Baseball's lockout. What you've seen, what you've heard and thought about coming through the MLB and MLBPA discussions over the last few days that have taken place? Does spring training start on time? Does the season start on time? What needs to take place, Marty, in these negotiations for things to start happening?
Well, number one is time. And like any labor negotiation with management and labor, until you really push the envelope, you really don't get many concessions. So I think we're still in that limbo period because, they have till probably March 1st to get something going, to get a month of spring training in and get the season started on time. So unfortunately, we're not into February yet, so we're getting this posturing back and forth. But what we're really dealing with, and I use the term, it's a redistribution of wealth. And the money is there. It's just a question of how the players are going to be involved with that revenue and how much the owners are willing to redistribute the wealth that they have to some of the players. And really, it's come down to the younger players. That's the biggest part. The pre-arbitration players, the minimum salary, that the owners want to have a bonus pool to pay the pre-arbitration 2+ players. And the question of how much money would be in that pool, and it would be based on WAR, whatever that is, and home runs, RBIs, and MVP votes, and things like that. And you've got all these kind of issues that you need to be a labor lawyer to really understand. But what happened in baseball is really the fundamental question. That is, teams spending money mm-hmm. and not tanking. And saying, look, we can have a payroll of $90 million and we could win 78 games, or we could have a payroll of $190 million and win 84 games. And that's the truth, and that's the way they look at it. So what they've done is they have teams that tank. So I think the draft has to be changed. And I don't think you can tank and get the first pick, second pick, third pick, and spend, like the Pirates or these teams, 40, 50, 60 million and get a pick. And I think they're going to have to go to an NBA-type lottery where the first pick is not guaranteed. And I think you have to have a minimum of amount of money that teams spend. And then on the upper end, you don't want to have a salary cap, and they're arguing about this. The salary cap is, $220 right now. I call it a cap because it's a tax. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to go, if you go over it 2 years in a row, they take your car away. it's incredible penalties that happen here. So the players want to go from 220 maybe to 240 to 260. So there'd be more money that can be spent. And the owners, of course, don't want to do that. And it goes back to the history of bonus babies. Go back to the 40s and 50s. The owners couldn't stop themselves from spending. They can't stop themselves ever from spending money. So they enact all these rules that impact the players and their salaries to stop themselves from spending money. So in the 50s, if you got a bonus over $8,000 or $4,000, whatever it was, you had to stay on the roster for 2 years.
Mike McCormick, right?
Yeah, Mike McCormick was a Koufax. You had an Al Kaline, people like that. They had to stay on the roster for a couple of years, and therefore they wanted to try to, limit the bonus payments that would be going out. So this is not anything new. And again, they're always fighting about that. So what's happened? Well, when you get to arbitration, and we see with the Giants, the players that are in years 4, 5, and 6, now if you're a big-time player, the Poseys of the world, Crawford, Belt, people like that, arbitration was always going to be easier for you, or you signed the contract giving away your arbitration years, but you got paid a good amount of money to do it, $75 million for Crawford to do it. So what's going to happen is that the analytics of the game have now told the general managers, who are all, mathematical geniuses from the Ivy League, that if you have a player in years 4, 5, and 6 who, may hit 270 and give you a WAR of 0.08, you can get a guy and pay him $775,000 or $700,000 or $600,000, whatever the minimum will be, and you don't have to arbitrate with him. So they've wiped out the middle class. And this is a problem for the players. Unless you're a big-time player, and you can command, you know, that big money on the open market. If you're one of those guys who ends up in the 4, 5, or 6 range and you just get non-tendered, you can't get your market value back. And they have a reason now to do that, and that's analytics. So that's a problem. So they've got it. The players are in a real quandary here to protect themselves and make sure they get part of this wealth. That's why I say it's a redistribution of wealth, because the money is there. So I hope that made sense. It almost makes me feel like I'm back in law school with labor law.
I was going to say, just invite Marty Lurie into the next negotiating session, and really? We'll have ourselves a CBA.
Really? It's that complicated with, you know, there are different things. And then, of course, we go to expanded playoffs, and there's all sorts of things. But it really is protecting the salaries of the younger players, and also the players who are now arbitration eligible who are getting squeezed out of the game. Mm-hmm. That's really, I think, what it comes down to.
Well, Marty, as we wrap up here, 49ers or the Rams on Sunday?
49ers, I love it. All the way. You know, look, defense wins, pitching wins. You know, I've said this a million times. Their defense is fabulous. They beat this team 6 times. I think that matters.
Yep.
And I think it'll be a great – I love the game last week. I texted Pop at the end of the game. I said I listened to every word of the broadcast. I synced it up to the TV so I can listen to, you know, to Pop. And it was a fabulous game, and I think they keep going. And I think they're – look, the Rams are up 27-3, and they got tied. You're going to tell me that team's going to push the 49ers around? No. Not going to happen.
There you had it. You heard it here first, as you always do. Marty Lurie on the KMBR airwaves here on KMBR tonight. Marty, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure. You know, I'm looking forward to you and I and Bill and Adam and getting ready for the season and Bruce Jenkins and all the things we do. And, you know, the pregame is a special part of Giants baseball, and this is my 12th year coming up with KMBR, my 26th year, I think, of doing this in the Bay Area. So for all of us, the weekends are special, and you become a big part of it.
Well, it's my pleasure and a great privilege of mine. So I owe you, sir.
Well, you do a good job, and I know the fans enjoy it. And I look forward to baseball, and we'll have it. You know, we'll have it. They'll figure it out. Well, you know, they need just a few weeks of spring training. So I say March 1st is the key for me.
There it is, March 1st. More coming up next. You're listening to KMBR tonight. KMBR 104.5 680, the sports leader.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.